grease, steel, cracked iron, and bayou grass. Sun's heading creekside, days fading fast. Are you really digging for peace, or is that just a lie you tell to help you sleep? Sure that
welcome to the Wrecking Yard. I'm Jerry Wayne Longmire, and y'all, presumably still y'all, all are welcome here in the Church of Internal Combustion. We just ask that you show up with an open heart. Boy, it's just, this year's just cooking along, man. Moving off into October. I was feeling a little run down at the end of this week. It's Sunday. Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock. I'm way behind getting this done. Just couldn't, man, I was having trouble getting inspired this week, to be honest with you. I was having trouble finding inspiration this week. I'm probably just a little tired, a little run down. I've been blowing and going a bunch lately. I drove up yesterday morning. I got up about 5 in the morning and took my sister back to East Texas. And attended my little cousin's funeral, Rashonda. And I don't really have much to say about that. Her teenage son got up and spoke some beautiful words about her. And it was, you know, as nice as a funeral can be. Then I left there and I went out and visited my mom's headstone, which I do most times when I go through there. Not every time, but I don't take a lot of solace in that. Some people take great solace in going to a cemetery and sitting with their loved one's headstone and feel closer to them, I guess. I reckon, you know, I don't know because I don't understand it. It doesn't. I go there to visit it, and sometimes I feel like that's out of a, more out of duty, maybe, more out of, I think it's what I'm supposed to do, more so than I feel any kind of connection to her there. Really anybody at any graveside, it just doesn't. All it really puts in my mind is one of the worst days of my life. You know what I mean? Like, it's not, it doesn't, I don't feel close to her. I mean, it's a nice headstone. There's a little bench and everything. And I mostly focus on, you know, like why the grass ain't growing, you know, like, I think maybe I need to wear some of them spike shoes next time I go and aerate the shit out of all that caliche around her gravesite. And throw some rye seeds in there. But I don't know why I go there. I don't feel close to her there. I mean, it's as good a place to have a conversation with her as anywhere. And after that funeral, I just kind of needed a minute to sit somewhere alone with my thoughts and, you know, have a good cry and get that shit out of my system. And I talked to her. I sat and spoke with my mother at length in my head about the way the family's so fractured and the fact these babies, my mom raised, let me tell you something, Brittany died last year. Brittany lived with us. Brandon lived with us. Rashonda lived with us. Jenny lived with us. Jimbo never lived with us. He usually lived with his dad when his mom was off the rails or whatever was happening. But all of the rest of my mom's sisters and her brother's children lived with us at one point. She was kind of the caretaker for the whole family. And I mean, I seen her yank her sister out of a crack house, you know, like, you know what the shining moment, what the shining moment of this whole thing has been is I lost touch with my Aunt Janet, and I don't know why I lost touch with her. She was not who I was angry at. I mean, I was angry at a lot of things, and of course I was a young parent and feeling self-righteous, but I lost touch with her. And I was never angry. She was not who I was angry at. I was angry at my grandmother. I was angry at Bobby Jr. I was real angry at Bobby Jr. But I was never... So the one shining spot in this is that I have kind of like, I've reconnected with my Aunt Janet, and I sat with her and Candida at the funeral, and it was good to hug Candida and have that moment with them, as sad as it was. And we've texted a little bit and talked on the phone a little bit, and so that's the one shining spot, is that I have reforged some kind of connection with her because I need it. She might need it too. I don't know. Sorry, some of you us. I didn't write this one out. You guys are getting freeform today. I figured I needed some brevity. After the events of the last couple of weeks, I needed some brevity, so I decided today I'm going to tell y'all these are three of my favorite fishing stories. Three of my favorite fishing stories. And I've told you I'm the world's worst angler. I'm certainly the worst angler in my family. But I do love to fish. I've done a lot of fishing in my life. I got a lot of fishing stories. But these are three of my favorites. My absolute favorite, I've already told y'all, is where I shot holes in my John boat, trying to get away from a snake. We got a snake story in here today, but this time it's not my fault. Anyways, that's what we're going to do today. I'm excited about this. Any of my fans who are Lemons racers or involved with Lemons racing, I'm not going to be there the whole weekend when y'all come to Angleton. Is it Angleton? I think it's Angleton in November. I'm going to be at San Antonio doing some shows Friday and Saturday, but I'm coming home Saturday night. Sunday, I'm going to go down to the Lemons race and hang out with the judges and bullshit and shake hands, and anybody wants meet and greet pictures, whatever, of course, we'd do all that. And just have a good time and kind of watch the wrap-up of the 24 Hours of Lemons. And so I'm excited about that. It's one of my favorite experiences I've ever had at a racetrack in my life. The last time I went, so looking forward to that. I am going to tell y'all a little story, and this will give you some brevity and maybe some insight into the absurdity of how my mind works sometimes. But when I got up there to go up to the funeral, I don't normally get up that early anymore. Now, when I worked construction, I was 5:30 boots on the ground every morning. And I don't do that shit no more. I usually get up around anywhere between 8 and 11. Just depends on what I did the night before and how late I stayed up. I'm a bit of a night owl. But Friday night, I tried to go to bed early. Saturday, I get up. I fix myself a big old thing of coffee. My Ethiopian Yogurt Chef supercharged coffee. I drove my sister back up Longview to my dad's house and spoke with my father a little bit, and I went over to the funeral. Didn't really have a chance to eat. Didn't really, tried to go in the bathroom to tackle the morning constitution. I'm pretty regular, but being it was so early, my system wasn't ready. So I was like, well, I guess that problem will present itself whenever it presents itself, and I will deal with it as I need to deal with it. And went to that funeral, drank all that coffee, and after I left my mom's graveside, I was headed back up 59, back to Houston, back down 59, back to Houston from Longview. It's about a 3 hour, it's about 3 hours, 3.5 hours maybe. Boy, just a little outside of Corsicana, deep off in East Texas. My intestines made me aware of a clear and present danger that there was no doubt in my mind I was about to do some damage to a gas station bathroom. I just had to find one. And I seen this little, this nice little store on the side of the road. I forgot what they're called, Brody's or something like that. There's a little chain of them. I see one of them, so I whip into Brody's, pull the old Maserati up to the gas pump, get the gas going. I run off in there. Get in the stall and start tackling my redemption, right? And it's, woo, buddy. It's bad. It's bad. Crohn's disease plus coffee. Long car ride. It's bad. Sorry, my allergies are jacking with me today. So I proceed to start wrecking this bathroom stall. Like, wrecking this bathroom. Like, it's bad. And I hear the door open, and I see some cowboy boots under the stall. I see them shuffle in, and the door shuts, and I hear just a real, real kind of quiet, just a little, shoo. Because I know he had caught a whiff. So now I'm like, I'm kind of embarrassed. So like, you don't want to be associated. Look, I've been recognized in gas stations before. I don't want to come out of a stall after wrecking a bathroom and get recognized. I've had it happen before, and it's an awkward situation, you know. So I like, and I'm not saying it happens, I get recognized all the time, but it does occasionally happen. So, and it happens a lot in East Texas gas stations. So I put my feet kind of like up because I didn't want him to see I was in there still, because he was shuffling towards the urinal. And I thought, I'll just wait this dude out. He'll take a leak, wash his hands going down the road, and I'll ease out and get back to the Maserati, finish my travels home to Houston. And I can tell from the shoo at the beginning and the shuffle of the way he's shuffling his feet as he walks that there's a number of things. The way he's shuffling his feet, the little shooey, I know what I'm dealing with here is either an elder Gen X or a boomer age East Texas man. I can picture what he's wearing. I can't see him, but I know he's got some faded Wranglers on, probably a brown leather belt with either a knife or a tape measure on it, and a button-up fishing shirt, and possibly a feed store hat, the old Purina logo on it or something. I'm telling you, I know what this guy looks like without seeing him. I know he's elder Gen X or boomer, because he's shuffling his feet, which means he just got out of his car or his truck, and he's a little stiff. He's my age or more, and he's a little stiff from being in the vehicle. Also, they're round-toe boots. Ain't nobody wearing those but elder Gen X and boomers. Even half people my age are wearing square toes now. But there's just a handful of us left that still like round-toe boots. I know who this guy is. And he shuffles over the urinal, he's taking his leak, and I'm holding my feet up, trying to be kind of quiet. And then I hear his phone say, turn left now. He's left his navigation on. And then it comes right back, turn left now. And then the third time it says, turn left now, I hear him go,
I got my dick in my hand. I can't turn anywhere. And I'm done now. Now I'm guffawing. I am crying laughing, right? I put my feet back on the ground. You're going to know I'm here now, buddy. I am roaring laughing. I'm coughing and choking. I'm laughing so hard. And then I hear just kind of, I just hear him say, "Hey, man, you done that in here? I think there might be something wrong with your intestines. You need to get that checked out, son." And he washes his hands and walks out of the bathroom. I'm crying, right? I'm done. Get myself cleaned up, come out of the bathroom. And I see, like, I walk through the store, and I'm trying not to look at anybody, but I look over here by the cooler where the cold drinks are, and sure enough, there's those cowboy boots. They are attached to a pair of faded Wranglers. The faded Wranglers are wearing a button-up fishing shirt. The only thing I got wrong was the feed store hat. He had like a flop hat on. That was the only thing I was wrong about was the feed store hat. And I walked out that store. It parked right there on the front of the store was a 1996 Ford F-350 dually in that hunter green, dark green color. And I knew immediately whose truck that was. I knew who I've just had an interaction with. Oh, I must have laughed about that halfway back to Houston. I got my dick in my hand. I can't turn anywhere. Old East Texas men are undefeated, bro. There's nothing funnier. Nothing funnier. All right, let's get off into some of these stories. This is going to be kind of a short one today. This story is about a buddy I had named RC for a while. And me and RC, bro, we'd go out fishing every once in a while, and we know RC, we got along pretty well. We kind of knew each other through work. I was probably, in my mid-20s about this time, about 24, 25. And he was a dude I met doing NDT and had him a nice, one of those, it's kind of like a bay, you put five or six people on it, like a bay boat with a little center console. I don't know a lot about boats, but he had this type of boat with a center console. And RC was real bad about telling me, "Hey, man, let's go fishing Saturday, and we'll meet up over where we're going to go." This particular time, we was going to go to Lake Somerville. Said, "Man, we'll meet up there out the lake. I'll meet you out there about 6 a.m. All right, we'll get an early start and go fishing." Well, I'd say 7 out of 10 times, I would go out to the lake and wait for RC for 30 or 45 minutes because he would always be late. And it would, like, especially if we're going to Lake Somerville, because I'd have to get up like an hour and a half, 2 hours early to get my ass up to Lake Somerville in time. This particular morning, I got up to Lake Somerville about 6:30 in the a.m. Sure enough, RC ain't there. Call him, he don't answer his phone. Well, guess I'll just wait. Well, I sat there in my car watching the sun get higher and higher and get more irritated by the minute. And about 7:30, I see RC's pickup. He's got it was like a F-250 at the time. I see him come rolling in his red F-250. And I notice right away that there's a girl in the passenger seat. I'm really irritated. He pulls up over there, kind of honks at me. I hop out of my car. I walk up to his truck, my fishing rods. I said, "Oh, you brought company and you're late." I said, yeah, the girls took a little bit. The girls, in the back seat, there's another girl. This is some new girl. He just started seeing the girl in the passenger seat. She's got a friend, wants to hang out and go fishing with us. I'm not saying, look, I know girls go fishing and there's a lot of girls fish better than me. I'm not one of those type of dudes. But It's not what I was looking for that morning. That morning, I just wanted to go hang out with my buddy on the boat, throw a couple lines in the water. I wasn't dressed to be around girls. This is, you know, back, like, fishing used to be different. You took whatever gear you had and you wore your old dirty clothes and you went fishing. You didn't put on a NASCAR looking jumpsuit and have to have $60,000 worth of equipment to go catch bass. This is pre all that. I said, man, I get him back there by the boat. I said, what the hell, dude? He said, no, man, she's cool. She's fun. They both go fishing all the time. They know what they're doing, you know. It's going to be a good time. We're going to have a good time. I brought some beer. We're going to have a good time. Man, it doesn't sound like it's going to be a good time to me. We get out there. We get the boat launched. When we get out of the lake, we go to one of our favorite spots out there in Somerville. It's a little kind of little covey area we like to go to. And sure enough, the girl can fish, right? Like, she's got her own shit set up. She's already got a line in the water. She's fishing. I was using one of my favorite little spinner baits, and I start casting a spinner bait out there, and I ain't getting shit. I ain't getting no hits, nothing. So I switch to topwater, and I still ain't getting no hits. This girl is catching fish after fish. Like, every time she throws her line out, this girl's catching a fish, which is fine. Outfish me. I get outfished by everybody. I don't care about that. But the thing that's irritating me is she's complaining. I think her name was Samantha. She's complaining the entire time. She's complaining about how hot she is. She's complaining that she doesn't really feel good. This girl's catching fish every time she throws a line in the water, but she's complaining, and nobody else on the boat's complaining. But this girl that he's brought to hang out with me is just complaining. I'm over on that end of the boat with her, and we move to another spot. We try another spot. Sure enough, she's still catching fish. I still ain't catching shit. I'm casting out there. And I'm frustrated, man, and I'm giving RC death looks. I'm like, boy, why'd you do this to me today? Now it's like 9 o'clock in the morning. I'm irritated. I hadn't caught anything. This is not the fishing trip I signed up for. I'm just frustrated as hell by that point. And RC says, hey, the complaining girl goes down to talk to her friend. They talk to RC. I'm not paying attention to them. I'm still trying to catch these fish that don't have no interest in nothing I'm doing. You know, like I said, I'm more irritated by them. We all had one of them days. Maybe not. Maybe you're a great fisherman. Man. RC comes down to my end of the boat. He says, hey, the girls want to stop. There's a little place you could ride your boat up to, a little store and all that. Girls want to stop, and they don't want beer. They want something else. And I'm about 3 beers in at this point. So, yeah. So, we're going to stop fishing, and we're going to go all the way back over there, get them something else to drink, and then we're going to come back out here in the heat and try to fish some more. Is that what you're telling me? He's like, hey, man, I know you're irritated. I said, no. I'm beyond irritated at this point. Let's just, whatever. Anyways, I'm sitting on the front of that bay boat. He's driving. 2 girls are sitting in the back. And we're headed back to where the marina is. And I see a pier that looks, I don't know, 60 feet away. And I just get it in my head that I'm done. And there's another boat coming, and it's some other dudes, some other girls. They got radio blasts like a ski boat. And these girls start hollering at those girls, and RC slows down to let these girls talk to these other girls on the boat. And I just remember I just stood up, and when I would go fishing, I always had my phone in a Ziploc bag, you know, just in case of dropping water. It was back when phones weren't waterproof. And I stuck that Ziploc bag with my phone and my cigarettes in my pocket. And I said, RC, you let me down, brother. I'm done. And I just jumped off his boat and started swimming for that pier. And he was just hollering at me, and the girls were hollering, and other people on the other boats hollered, and I'm swimming. Well, it was a lot longer than 60 feet. Woo, my fat ass about died trying to swim to that pier. But I just kept swimming, just ignored them, swimming, get my ass to that pier, pull my ass up the ladder, get my little Ziploc bag out, got my phone and my cigarettes in it so it's not just soaking in water. And I just turned around, waved at RC, and then I walked down to that pier, walked around those people's house, and started walking my way back to the marina where my car was. And it took me a minute. We were probably about a mile or two away from where the boat launch was, and I finally got over there. And right about the time I got in my car, I seen old RC, and he was pulling away from that marina. He seen me. He starts waving and hollering at me, and I just gave him a little wave, got in my car, and drove away. I never, ever in my life thought that a fishing trip would be so bad that I would jump overboard to get out of it. But I jumped overboard to get out of that fishing trip. And I never went fishing with RC again. He ended up getting transferred to another company and moving anyways. But he would ask, hey, well, you want to go? No, I don't want to go fishing with you no more, RC. Nope. I'm done fishing with you, bud. Didn't catch a lick of fish. Well, sure caught my ride home. Got myself out of that damn situation. That's pretty bad, man. You got to jump overboard and get the hell away from a fishing trip. It's a bad fishing trip. I jumped my fat ass in that water and swam for freedom. Me and my dad, we gone fishing a lot, you know. We've got so many stories. Hell, we nearly sank a boat. But mostly usually what me and my dad used to do is we would load up and we would drive down to Brazos Bend State Park in his old Cordoba, and he'd bring a ice cooler, old Igloo ice cooler, and we'd get out there and we'd fish for fish we'd never catch. I don't know if the alligators eat all the fish in Brazos Bend State Park. I don't know if there are fish there. I've never caught a single fish ever, but we would go down there about every other weekend and try to fish at stupid Brazos Bend State Park. And there's a couple of lakes in there. There's Elm Lake and Willow Lake and something else lake. There's a couple of lakes in there. And they got kind of a little steep, or they did back then, had little steep embankments going down to them, little grassy embankments. It's a real swampy, mossy kind of southeast Texas kind of place. A lot of alligators, a lot of snakes, a lot of fowl, a lot of herons and whatnot. We've been down there fishing all morning. Hadn't caught nothing. My dad had caught a little small bass at one point and throwed it back. But what had happened is he was about three lures down. So they're all kind of overhanging branches and logs in the water, all kind of. It's easy to lose a lure out there, and you ain't going to go out there and try to get it on account of them out. There's alligators everywhere. And Dad's done lost one of his favorite lures, which was a baby torpedo, a little clear baby torpedo. That's his go-to lure. He's done lost that lure. He's irritated with that. And he started muttering. He's kind of cussing and hollering, you know, not hollering, but cussing under his breath. And he ain't having a good time. I also not having a good time because I can tell he's getting amped up. We're headed towards a full senior meltdown at some point. Whether it's going to be in the car ride on the way home or it's going to be something stupid I do, something's coming. Well, back in them days, my daddy, boy, he used to have him a couple of Dr. Peppers every morning. Otherwise, he'd get a headache. He liked his caffeine. He had to have him a cup of cold Dr. Peppers every morning. And we had stopped at a store and they didn't have Dr. Pepper. All they had was Mr. Pibb. Well, any Dr. Pepper aficionado knows that's just a no-go. Mr. Pibb does not taste like Dr. Pepper. It's not Dr. Pepper. So he's irritated. He's drinking Mr. Pibb. He's then lost a couple lures. And he gets one of his, is a rattle trap that belonged to his dad. He gets it snagged up on a log, underneath the log. And he's just a fuss. He's not going to give up on this because it's his, one of his dad's fishing lures. And he's just a fussing and fighting with his fishing lure. And now he's getting a little more hot. And he gives it a good stiff yank. And when he does, that rattle trap comes disengaged and comes flying up and catches his mesh hat and hooks all in his hat and yanks his hat right off his head behind him. Luckily, it didn't hit him in the face or nothing. Hat hits the ground. Boy, Dad goes cussing that hat, goes cussing that lure. God, I'm sick of this place. I ain't never coming back to this place. Bah, 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 bah. He's got that old cooler sitting right there on the embankment. And it's a little, it like rained a couple days before, so it's a little muddy, it's a little slick. And he goes over there and he picks his hat up and he goes to sit down on that cooler to untangle that hat. And when he puts his full weight on that cooler just takes off down that hill like a bobsled. And the last thing I saw before that cooler went in the water was him holding that hat with his arms in there. Boosh! And then the meltdown came. It came out. Oh my God, some bitch, what? He lost his mouth. I'm trying to drag that cooler out. Mr. Pibbs are floating away in the lake. His hat's floating away. He's cussing about that, but he doesn't realize the hat's still attached to his line, which is still attached to his rod. And so I go over there and grab his rod and reel, start reeling his hat in. And now he's just, he's standing ankle-deep water just throwing a fit. He's hot. Boy, he done cussed everything. He's cussing the birds. He's cussed everything in this park at this point. And it was just, we get all that crap loaded up in that Cordova. And it was so quiet while we were driving home, I could hear his shirt dripping on the vinyl of the seat. Deep, deep, deep. And I was afraid to say a word because I didn't want to re-engage it, you know? But I promise you, in the last days of my life, one of the last things my brain will present to me is that image of him riding that igloo cooler like a bobsled right off into Elm Lake. Just hollering the whole way. Never dove off of it, nothing. Just holding that hat and hollering the whole way. Right in the water. Good time, Pops. This last story is one of my favorite. I told y'all that for a while I had a little John boat. When I was in my 20s, I got that little John boat. Me and a couple buddies had little John boats. And they were just old. They weren't even all John boats. So, like, the one my buddy Jason had was just like a little flat-bottom boat with a little 30-horse Johnson engine. It was a small engine on it. Man, I'm trying to remember what lake we was at. We were on Lake Conroe. We were at Lake Conroe. This is back when Lake Conroe was still pretty undeveloped. But over on the north end of the lake, there's a boat launch, and it's called Scott's Ridge. We were going to go in. There was me, buddy Jason, and my other buddy, Bo. And Bo and me had hung out a little bit, but we weren't like tight buddies. We knew each other through work and stuff like that. Bo was a little wild for my taste. He was always, he would show up drunk to go fishing, you know, and he would get a little carried away every once in a while. We had pulled Bo and his boat off of logs and all kind of stuff because he would just do dumb shit every once in a while. And Jason, pretty sensible old boy. Knew Jason a long time. He was a little older than me. Had a big old boy, big old fella. But Jason, terrified of snakes. Terrified of snakes. And that north side of Lake Conroe is poor, is chock full of snakes. Sorry, chock full snakes. If you go up there and don't see a snake, I don't know. I think you should go get your eyes checked because they're everywhere up there. And a lot of them, they look like water moccasins when you're scared, especially. But we got these black water snakes, and they're aggressive. They'll chase you. They'll bite shit out of you. They're not venomous, but they'll chase you. They'll bite you. They'll try to attack you. They're aggressive, daggum little snakes. And some of them ain't even that little. They get to be pretty good size. You know, it's not uncommon to see one 3 or 4 foot long. Plenty of water moccasins too. Well, we go out there, we got this little area, we go with this bunch of tree stumps and everything, and we take our little boats over there, and we're just fishing. And I actually caught a couple little cats, little channel cats. I was pretty happy with that. I didn't have a live well, so I stuck them on a stringer, hanging off my little boat. And I was doing all right, and I caught these two little channel cats. And I hit a bass, got him reeled in and everything. And he wasn't big. He was like 1 pound maybe, you know. And I stuck him over there on that stringer. So I took him off a hook. And Jason's over there kind of close to me at the moment. And he says, man, I'm going to go try this other little area. I said, yeah, no problem. I said, honestly, I'm about to call it a day as soon as I figure out what I'm going to do with these fish, you know, if I'm going to keep them, give them somebody. A lot of times it's people at boat docking, just give them their fish, whatever. Well, here come old Bo. Come sidling up. Me and Bo's been doing pretty good. Bo's got him a couple good-sized bass. Bo's got a little, like, a portable live well in his boat, and he's got them bass in that live well. And I'm talking to Bo, and I go to pull the stringer up. When I pull the stringer up, there's one of them damn water snakes. One of my catfish is gone. I guess he already ate that one. And he's latched on to the other catfish. And I just, when I grab the stringer, I just kind of flop it in the boat. So when I flop it in the boat, he's about 2 foot. This black snake comes there, hits the boat, but he doesn't let go of that fish. So when he doesn't let go of the fish, I just start stomping the crap out of him. I'm just wham, 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 stomping him. I've got a pair of boots on. I stomp the piss out of this snake. To the point I think I killed him because he kind of, you know, snakes, they'll wad themselves up and start writhing and kind of stop. And you think, oh, I got it. And Bo's laughing at me. And he's like, what you going to do with that snake? You going to clean it? You going to take that snake with us? No, hell no, he done ate my other fish. I throwed that bass in the water. Like, I'm done. I'm going to call it a day. I'm going to load my boat up. And I reached out, grabbed a hold of that snake. I was going to go throw it off in the water. Bo says, no, give me that snake. I said, what do you want to do with that snake? Don't worry about it, man, just give me that snake. I'm going to have a little fun. I was like, you better not go screwing with Jason with that snake, dude. He is, like, you don't realize, like, he tells us he's scared of snakes, but I've seen him in action. I seen him almost jump out of his boat one time about a snake coming too close to his boat. And don't screw with Jason about the snake. Like, you're going to scare the piss out of him. No, I'm just having a little fun. I'm just having a little fun. I said, boy, that's on you, buddy. I start heading back to boat launch. I see Jason slow down, chit-chat with him a little bit. Hey, man, I'm going to go ahead and load up. You guys want to go in town and get some food or something? I'm down for it. Jason, hell yeah, man, we'll run. There was a little place we used to eat up there off 1097 at the time. He said, no, man, I'll go with you. That sounds good. I'm about tired anyways. It's cool, man. Bo's bringing up the rear. And Jason was doing something. So Bo pulls up beside me. I said, hey, man, I'm going to go ahead and load up. So I pull out, load my little boat up. And it was pretty easy load. Wasn't a big deal. Get my little boat on the trailer and hop out, wait up there, pull the boat out, start strapping my boat down. Bo pulls up, and he's got an even smaller boat than me. He's out of the water fast. Bip, 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 bip. So hooked up to his truck. I still ain't seen what he's done with his snake. Well, he pulls his truck up out of the way and goes park in the parking area with his boat, so we'll be ready to go. Jason, at the time, had this, it was about an 87 C10 Chevrolet pickup.
And it was beat to piss. I mean, it was just an old square body truck, needed a bunch of work, run like shit. Jason was proud of it. He liked it. It was his granddaddy's, or I don't know the story. It was somebody's truck, and he was proud of it. Well, I see Bo over there messing around with Jason's truck, and I thought maybe Jason asked him to pull it over the boat launch, because sure enough, here comes Bo back in Jason's truck. Jason's boat was a little bigger than ours, you know, like I said, it was kind of a little flat bottom thing. And Bo backs his truck over there and backs it down the launch. I was like, oh, that's cool. We're going to help him get loaded up. So I'm finishing strapping my boat up, and Jason gets out, hooks Bo. Jason pulls boat up on the trailer, straps it, the front little clip to the reel, hops out of the boat. Bo bullshitting right there beside the truck for a little bit. And Bo starts walking away from the truck, and Jason goes to hop up in the cab of that truck. And I noticed Bo is like watching that truck, like just watching Jason. And I'm like, please God, tell me he didn't do something with that snake with Jason. Like, you're going to piss him off, then we're not going to eat lunch. I might as well just go home at this point. But nothing happens. Jason gets in the truck, starts pulling the boat up the boat launch. About 3/4 of the way up that boat launch, all of a sudden Jason hollers and slams the gas on that pickup. And when he does, that old 350 roars and that C10 just rockets up that boat. Oh, wah, burning tires up that boat launch, just wah, 90 nothing. Well, there's right when you come up out of that boat launch, not even 500 feet, there's a stand of trees, big old pine trees there. I think he's about to rocket into these pine trees. I'm like, holy, I'm turned around, I'm frozen, you know? And he's coming awful damn close to my little pickup, my boat, and he slams on the brakes. And when he slams on the brakes, that old flat bottom boat on his trailer, he had a pro net on his back instead of a tailgate, one of those little net things going across where the tailgate was. And it was kind of sagging down in the middle and such that it made the perfect ramp, because when that strap snapped on that John boat, when he slammed on the brakes, that John boat hit that pro net and just vroom, right through the back windshield of that C10. I mean, wedged it in there. Like the little triangle peg and the triangle holder, ram, right up into the back window of that C10. Jason's already out of the truck hollering. Bo set that snake on the seat of the truck, thinking that snake was dead. Jason would get in the truck, see the snake, and jump out of the truck, running and hollering up and down the boat ramp. Snake wasn't dead. The snake had flopped off the seat. And when Jason started coming up the boat ramp, that snake slithered right out between his legs, and him stomping the gas was him trying to stomp the snake. But now, Jason's a big old boy. Bo looks panicked now because Jason's out of his truck, and he's hollering. He's got a boat through his back windshield. I'm running over there to help him. But I ain't about to tell him I know anything about this snake. And boy, Bo comes running over there, and I'm staring at him like, boy, he's going to turn around and whoop the fire out of you. If I was you, I'd keep my mouth shut. And to Bo's credit, I will say this. Bo didn't say a word. Oh, my God, what happened? He gave the Oscar performance of a lifetime. How did that snake get in your truck? That's what you get for leaving your windows down, Jason. Like, oh, you're laying it on a little thick right now. Jason's going to put two and two together and beat the shit out of a Bo in a minute. We got that damn boat wedged out of that truck and lifted and back onto the boat trailer, half-ass strapped down. Woo! I couldn't wait to get away from them, too. I said, you know what? I don't even feel like going to eat now. I'm just going to go home. Y'all have a good night. I'd jump in my truck, haul ass. Well, we all had to work on a job site for the next week. And all the next week, let me tell you. Bo was kind of like our film guy. He was like the guy that would bring us the film while we shot. And you always want a film guy to bring film to you so you get your shots done first. Let me tell you something. Bo was bringing me my film first all week because he was just terrified
that, because Jason's had told everybody at work this story, and everybody's like, sounds like somebody threw that snake in your truck. I don't see why that snake would just crawl off in your truck like that. And now Jason's like, and Bo's all week, please God, don't tell Jason. Well, come about 6 months later, Jason was going to go work somewhere else, and we was all out. We took him all out to the little bar. There's a little bar called Frankenstein's over there. We went out to this bar, and we're having drinks, and I guess I got a little too loose, and I was getting ready to leave, and Bo and Jason was sitting right there in the bar. I said, Jason, I may not ever get to hang out with you again, but I feel remiss if I didn't tell you Bo's the one put that snake in your truck. Bo looked at me, I was panicked. And the last thing I see when I was walking away was Jason coming out of that stool towards Bo. Oh, that was a first class son of a bitch. I drove home and laughed my butt off about that. Anyway, there's three of my favorite fishing stories. I'll share some more with you another time. I needed something to help me get in a better mood. I hope it put some of y'all in a better mood. Let's do some testimonials, man. We'll get out of here today. Like I said, it's going to be a short one. Okay, I know I put these here. All right, here we go. All right. At Irate Garage. These are comments from last week's show. JW and Papaw Clark's Wrecking Yard helped to fix cars, and your Wrecking Yard is helping fix people. From little kids needing smiles to middle-aged dudes trying to figure out life and sort through the mistakes and pain that have been acquired through the years. I know it's been giving clarity to me. I also know that for whatever reason here, a big funny dude in Texas says he's rooting for me chokes me up every time. The last few episodes have been hitting hard for me, and I can't wait to see here what is next. Well, we got lots of stuff coming. Irate, I appreciate you listening, and it's funny you say it. My wife tells people I'm like Mr. Rogers for middle-aged men. But I really, I've talked to y'all about this. I've been thinking about the words I want to leave behind me when I'm gone, and the words that I have from other people that are gone, and I just won't mind. I'm not trying to say I deserve to be in a conversation with Mr. Rogers or Steve Irwin, but that's the kind of legacy I'd like to have. I'd like to have a legacy of kindness. So I thank you for tuning in, and I'm glad you get something from the show. I am rooting for you. Always, Bubba. At Stephen Deemer 2833. Sir, I really appreciate your show. I'm not an animal person by any means. I'm not a people person for that matter, but this episode stopped me in my tracks. Last week's episode too. My family looks forward to your show every week. Keep up the awesome job and prayers for your kitten. Hey, Bubba, I appreciate that. I don't think you have to be a cat person or a dog person or an animal person to care about the well-being of a critter. I've known several people in my life who did not keep pets, but were still kind to animals and still. And I've known several people in my life who didn't really care to hang around other people, but were still kind. And that's what I read in your words was kindness. I read in your words that you're a kind person. Doesn't matter if you're an animal person or a people person. You don't have to be anything you don't desire to be. But I do appreciate the kindness I hear in your words. Thanks for tuning in, brother. That our old buddy David Becker. This one had so much it is hard to comment on. My favorite uncle was one of the folks nobody could depend on. He loved to drink beer and chase women. He never married nor had kids. My mom's little brother, the black sheep. I drank Evan Williams when I was young. Now I have three whiskeys, Jameson's, Old Crow, and 10 High. Oh, I like a little Old Crow. You will not agree, but I would have knocked that little cat in the head and ended his suffering. I still love you, man, even if you are misguided. Well, you know,
there's a certain mercy, I'm not denying that, and giving up on creatures when they're done. But wisdom, I think, is being able to see which ones aren't done. The fighters. Them what rail against the odds. And I won't trust any guidance what tells me to give up on a fighter out of mercy. Fighters don't seek mercy. That's not how fighters work. And I could tell that little creature still had a lot of fight in her. And that's why I decided to do what I could do to help her. And now, 2 weeks later, we have a thriving, much healthier little kitten who's learning to play and having a good time and enjoying her little life. And it looks like she might even get to save her leg. And on top of that, we have brought joy to thousands of people across the world looking for some hope and a moment of kindness. So that doesn't make me feel misguided at all. I love you right back, brother. I do. But I'm sure glad she didn't go looking for you. And she came looking for us. Because that's not always the answer. I know sometimes it is, but it ain't always. All right. Why don't we wrap this? Oh, I do got a box. I actually opened this box, and it has got a mess of Hot Wheels in it. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, it's got 8 Hot Wheels in it, and they look to have been maybe hand-picked out because there's some really cool ones here. Little Toyota GR86. Little track wagon. There's just some neat, they almost look like, they don't look like they came in a pack. There's 8 Hot Wheels, and there's a note. Let's see who it's from. Hello, Mr. Longmire. My name is Dave Goodman. I guess you could consider me a day oneer. I discovered you through the truck astrology videos like many others. When you announced that you were starting a podcast, I was excited but hesitant. I love cars and trucks, but my knowledge of fixing them and working on them is limited. I soon found out that this podcast and you were unlike anything else around. You seem to be a very down-to-earth gentleman. It appears that you actually mean what you say. This is a rare quality, and if this is true, then I salute you, sir. I've been listening to you, and your stories, life experiences resonate with me. Growing up around old vehicles and being raised by a generation of folk that were dirt poor in their younger years. I don't usually get caught up in celebrities' causes, but you're different, sir. The way you carry yourself and conduct yourself is commendable. You have compelled me to write this rambling letter note and to donate to the Driven Dreams charity. You've also inspired me to be a better version of myself. Thank you. As far as the pictures I've sent along, I work for Lake Shirts Blue 84. We're one of the largest garment companies in the U.S. Up until the beginning of September, I was working at an HQ location in Detroit Lakes. And since I've relocated to a satellite facility about 100 miles southeast of there, of the many quirky things this company has done, having stickers, a Type 2 VW bus layered in stickers we produced as one of our mascots near the top. Your episode about the VW bus really hit home. My fort hangout when I was a kid was a 1969 Winnebago. I only saw it drive down the road one time, but I spent a lot of time inside that beast. Anyways, I thought I would share this picture with you. Oh, that's their little Type 2 Volkswagen bus just covered in stickers. Keep up the great work and the amazing podcast. I'm excited for your book. I'm rooting for you. Dave G. P.S. The cars were picked out by my 9-year-old son. He was excited when I told him that they were going to needy kids. I had a feeling. I had a feeling those cars were picked out by hand. They didn't come in a pack. And man, thank you for the great letter, Dave. And thank you for your wonderful donation. That's 8 smiles you just provided in the world. And you just can't do much better than that. You make people smile, ain't got a lot to smile about, then you're doing right by folks. Very kind. I've been thinking this week about pain. How we talk about it, how we hide from it, how we try to outrun it.
But the thing about hurt is it don't get smaller when you run. It follows you. And sooner or later, you got to turn around and face it. Y'all know I lost my younger cousin this week, and I've been sitting in that. I'm not trying to pretty it up. I'm not trying to make it mean something it don't. Just letting it ache. Just letting it be. Because that's the thing about grief, is it ain't polite, it ain't tidy, and it don't ask permission. It just moves in, kicks its boots off, sits down beside you. And I reckon that's where the real healing starts. When you quit trying to send it away and just sit with it a spell. The old philosopher said it better than I can, the Stoics, the Buddhists. All of them trying to say the same thing in their own tongue. Don't fight the storm, stand in it. You don't conquer sorrow by denying it. You endure it by knowing it. By letting it teach you what love costs and why it's worth the price. So I'm going to sit here a while in this ache. And if you're hurting too, maybe sit with me. Don't rush it. Don't dress it up. Let it hurt. Let it humble you. Let it remind you what mattered. Pain don't mean it's over. Pain means there's still something sacred left in you. And if you're going through something right now, I'm rooting for you. I'm rooting for you to face it. Sit with it. Let it do its work. I appreciate all your well wishes. Plenty of you have reached out to me since you heard the news, and I'm okay. I'm just a little sad. This was unexpected outcome. That's all. It went against the natural order of the way I thought things were supposed to go. You're not, there's some funerals you don't expect to ever go to, especially once you get to a certain point in your life. So this was just unexpected. That's all. I'm JW. I love you. Just another mile down the line. Lay me by the water's edge. Thanks for the donation. We got some more to unwrap next week. And I'll see you guys next week, man. Maybe I'll be smiling a little more.